Hi, everyone. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to the Device Talks, a weekly podcast. To quote Bill Belichick, or to paraphrase Bill Belichick before he got weird, we are on to Device Talks Minnesota. Device Talks Boston is part of the past. Device Talks Minnesota is our immediate future. I hope you'll join us on June 11th at the McNamara Center. We've got a great program laid out for you at minnesota.devicetalks.com. Check that out. We'll have presentations and conversations with Boston Scientific, with Medtronic, with Solventum, with Inspire, with cool surgical robotics companies. We'll hear from many cool startups. We'll have a whole room dedicated to technical presentations and other rooms talking about operational challenges. We love to cover it all at Device Talks, and we'll be doing that at Device Talks in Minnesota again on June 11th. Because we love you so deeply as podcast listeners, we have created a code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration at Device Talks Minnesota. So go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register. In this here episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast, you'll hear from Chris Newmarker. He's bringing his Newmarker's Newsmakers, and we also have a little bit of news that relates to us. So check that out. And then after that, I had a fantastic conversation with Vincent Sodon. He is the Vice President of the EMEA territories. Of course, that's Europe, Middle East, and Africa for neuromodulation at Boston Scientific. So I always enjoy the opportunity to learn how medtech technology is finding its way into other parts of the world. And Vincent was able to share that in great detail. So I'm sure you will enjoy that conversation. All right. Without any further delay, we're going to kick in to the Newmarker's Newsmakers. My microphone was a little weird, so it was weird at the start. Kind of leveled off at the end, but if you hear some weirdness at the start, don't fret. It's not weird the entire way through. All right, folks, let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready. Doing well, Tom. Doing well. Happy Friday, sir. Happy Friday.
Here we are. Yeah, we've got a big week next week, Chris. I'm coming out to the Twin Cities. The MedTech Nerd Tour is hitting the Twin Cities.
MedTech Nerd Tour. It's going to be great.
Yeah. No, it'll be fantastic. So we were just before we pushed record, kicking around some ideas. I mean, we'll be at the Medical Alley annual dinner on Thursday, so that'll be a certain stop. Certainly maybe we'll hit the McNamara Center. I'll check with them and see if we can pop in and just check it out, because that's where Device Talks Minnesota will be.
June 11th.
Thank you for that. Anything else? Any other place we need to hit?
Well, definitely. I'd say, swing around the Bakken Museum, maybe.
That'd be cool.
Check out Medtronic headquarters.
That'd be cool. Okay. Yeah, maybe we can climb a fence and get in there and record some video.
Yeah, we might be a little. It's definitely an imposing campus that they have.
Ooh, so. I can't wait to see it. Okay.
I'm like,
we climb the fences, yeah. Medtronic.
I don't want to. I mean, we. Medtronic, biggest company in our industry that we cover. Please, please don't arrest
us. Keep the hounds in the pen.
Don't release the hounds on us. Maybe I'll give them a little ping and say, hey, we're going to stop by.
Well, we're pinging them right now.
There we go.
We've announced our intentions publicly. So I want to stand. I want to see some of these world headquarters that you keep bragging about and being in the Twin Cities. I got to check them out. We can check out maybe Solventum and Boston Scientific, even though Boston Scientific really,
Solventum's kind of tucked in right now in 3M headquarters way out in Maplewood. Definitely head down Highway 169 and, out all those signs of major medical device companies that you can, see while heading down that highway.
I'm
it's
so
pretty
excited.
Impressive. Yeah, it's going to be great. We'll give you the tour. Maybe lunch we could, there's a few good choices. I'd say maybe, have you ever had a Juicy Lucy, Tom?
Not knowingly, no, I didn't. Tell me what it is, and I'll let you know.
It's, you know, it's a burger, but instead of putting a cheeseburger where you, instead of putting the cheese on top, they put the cheese inside the burger, so the burger is stuffed with molten cheese.
So it's like a molten chocolate cake, except,
which, I mean, it's usually traditional not to bite into one of those right away. Like, so it's a good,
yeah,
it's
like a cool. Otherwise, you're burning the tongue.
You might want to sip a drink, you know, while you sit around, you know, and chat, you know, and then you can, you know.
I am sold.
So maybe
was it a Juicy Lucy or a Lucy Goosey?
It's a Juicy Lucy. Yes.
Juicy Lucy. Yeah, okay. That makes more sense than Lucy Goosey. Fantastic. All right.
There's a number of old bars in Minneapolis that sell them. I'd probably say I'm a Matt's Bar fan. I'd say swing by Matt's Bar before I drop you off at the airport. I think that's
all right. Well, we don't want Matt's Bar to be, you know, stormed with Device Talks Weekly fans. So we'll keep our plans secret because we don't want to. We don't want to violate any fire codes, you know, with thousands of people
descending on. Yeah, Matt says pretty small. I mean, it's a pretty, pretty small place. Slinging burgers since the 1940s, but right.
All right, I'm excited. Yeah. I cannot wait. So we'll be in Minneapolis what dates are we looking at? We're Thursday and Friday. What are those dates?
Man, we are so busy. We're what day is it, Tom? I don't know. We'll be there on the 12th and the 13th of May. 12th
and the 13th.
Yes.
So when I did this in California, I drove around in a fire engine red Ford Mustang. What will we be cruising around?
Oh my
around
gosh, Tom! Today? I'm just like out of it here. We will be, you know, we'll be at the Medical Alley banquet on Thursday, May 15th, and then we'll be doing our nerd tour on Friday, May 16th. So, like, if you catch us around, and I've got the Sienna van for the family, but yeah, you might want to rent something cool. That might be fun.
Maybe we'll see if the budget allows for that, but you know, minivans are cool in their own special way.
You sound so sad.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing everybody in Minneapolis, especially at
we could splurge $100 to run something cool, right? Come on. We can do
that. Device Talks Mobile.
Yeah, it'll be great. Just get a decal that you can just rip off it when we're done.
Yeah, we'll get a magnetic decal. We'll get some lights on top.
I love it.
Maybe one of those big, like in the Blues Brothers, big loudspeaker, and we can be cruising through the neighborhood saying, Device Talks, Minnesota, June 11th, and getting the crowds to come. What do you think?
Sounds great. They might probably think it's mosquito control or something.
I'm not saying we're going to spray them with anything, Chris. We're gonna wash them over with information. That's all.
I go to the parades around here, and there's always like county mosquito control, and they have a big giant blow up mosquito on top of the vehicle.
This is gonna be a fun tour.
Awesome. I can't wait. This is great.
We've got some news this week.
Yeah, there is news. Yes.
Let's hit the number 5 on the Newmarket's Newsmaker.
All right. Well, number. Jeez. Number 5 on the list. This was actually from last week while we were doing Device Talks Boston, but MDO managing editor Jim Hamrand had a story up on Mass Device about how Cardinal Health is laying off employees as it faces up to $300 million in costs related to everything going on with the tariffs. But this has been a big trend we've seen with all the earnings reports. I mean, generally, we're seeing the major med techs are, you know, saying this is going to cost them, you know, a few $100 million a piece for the year. So,
yeah, we've seen hits. We've seen write-offs, so to speak. But I don't think, have we seen any major companies say they're laying off because of the tariffs?
Not as much. Cardinal Health was more of an.
Of course, they may do it and not say anything. But
yeah, or you know, you're actually hearing a lot more of like, okay, we're taking these charges, reducing our earnings forecast. I mean, we've seen a lot of earnings forecasts reduced. Then, kind of like as far as like restructuring, rejiggering, whatever you know they might be doing. You know, the companies are more generally saying having more of a wait and see approach. I mean, you hear a lot about the unpredictability that you know we have going on right now. So they're kind of waiting to see how everything, you know, shakes out in coming months. I mean, even right now, I mean, the Trump administration has a pause on at least some of the tariffs they were proposing on Liberation Day, you know, until they can figure it out. But yeah, a lot of, at least for now, though, we're just seeing a lot of charges, you know, coming from the big companies. I mean, my gosh, $200 million for Stryker, $200 million for Boston Scientific, you know, Robert Ford and Abbott's earnings call was saying a few hundred million dollars on a half year basis. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, companies overseas too saying this is going to, they're going to take a hit, like Philips saying 250 to 300 million euros for the year. Though, you know, there was, you know, one interesting thing too that I wrote about on MDO was Avamed is lobbying to get some kind of like US British MedTech partnership included. You know, I mean, we just had this announcement of the US-British trade deal, but you know, the White House said there was a lot of, you know, details that needed to get hammered out. You know, I mean, this was more like a framework that they agreed to, and included their framework that they released talked about negotiating additional agreements around industry. And here we have Avamed and the Association of British Health Tech Industries calling for like zero on zero tariffs between our two countries. And as well as like a system where anything that gets approved by the FDA in the US will be automatically approved in Britain. So, I mean, that's.
Wow, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if it'd be probably not vice versa, I guess.
And you know, that would be interesting. I mean, if you could get something approved in Britain, could that then, you know, be approved in the United States? I mean, that.
I would have to think that would be ideal, but well, very cool. Yeah. Well, no, it's great to see the industry. It is a global industry.
Yeah.
Global organization would be welcome. So.
Yeah.
That's good news.
Yeah, very good news. So.
All right, let's move on to number four, Chris Newmarker.
Hey, number four, we, you know, this story was from May 2nd, but this was about, you know, Financial Times report saying that Histosonics is getting a lot of interest from, you know, suitors that want to acquire it and that, you know, the valuation could be at more than $2.5 billion. But that Financial Times article listed, I mean, you know, anonymous sources citing, you know, people with familiar with the matter, but I mean, it was saying, listing off some of the like major medical device companies, Medtronic, GE Healthcare, J&J, like circling around. J&J already has an interest in Histosonics, you know, so I mean, that'd be really, really interesting.
I got a little J&J news for you, Chris Newmarker.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. We will have Tim Schmidt speaking at, I'll be interviewing him at Device Talks West.
Oh my gosh. That's fantastic.
Found out yesterday. Yep.
Woo.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So that's October 15th and 16th. So that's when the MedTech Nerd Tour goes back west. But
heading west.
So that's big news there.
That'll be fantastic. Right. I mean,
I'm really looking forward to it.
Haven't heard he's, gosh, how many? He's now like a year into running, you know, the J&J MedTech business. I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, remembering from the Ashley McAvoy story, I think she left October 2023.
Okay.
So he would have come in just around that time.
Yeah.
So it'll be 2 years in
yeah.
by the time we talk to him. So
running, yeah. I mean, running like one of the largest medical device businesses in the world. So I mean, that'll be fantastic.
Yeah. Looking forward to
yeah.
that. Me All too. Right. Let's move on to.
And I forgot to mention that Histosonics is based in actually just in the they are based around the Twin Cities. So,
oh yeah, maybe it's a nerd tour stop.
Maybe we'll have to
drive by.
We'll swing by Histosonics. Like, I think they're very close to where I live. Actually,
everything's close to where you live.
It is.
You're always saying that. It's right up the street. I don't know how you folks have figured out the spatial time continuum over there in Minneapolis, but it seems like a very convenient place to live.
Yes, I'm a big fan. You should move on over.
All right, what is item number three on the vaunted new markers and newsmakers list?
Well, this
Why can't I say that? I've been 5 years and I still stumble over
new markers
newsmakers.
Shelly sells seashells by the. All right, number three on the list. This is another company that's in my neck of the woods, Endogenics, and they just presented results of a trial studying their. It's a pulsed electric field system. That treats type 2 diabetes. So, you know, like this company was founded in partnership with Mayo Clinic, but you know, just a really, really interesting technology. I mean, this is
very cool.
You know, and you know, company's CEO is a former Medtronic executive who's really, really, really well known around the industry as well. Mm-hmm. So you should check out who actually spoke at a Device Talks show years ago. So you'll have to check out that story if you don't know who I'm talking about. So.
That's Stacey Pugh, right?
Yeah, Stacey Pugh. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, all right. There you go. Woo-hoo. Yeah.
You painted such a vivid picture, Chris Neumacher. I picked up on exactly who you were talking about. So, yes, no, cool company. We had Fractal Labs out here that was doing something similar. It wasn't in the intestine. I want to say it was in the renal glands, but wow. I think they dropped that program. So,
They were shifting on to some other technology, but
they moved on to more of a GLP-1 sort of strategy. They actually have a biotherapeutic, I think, in development.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to see it's. I think curing diabetes is obviously better than managing it. So
exactly,
let's see what happens.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. And yeah, I definitely think Stacey's someone I'd love to see us get on the podcast again soon.
Yeah, I don't know why we haven't had her on.
Yeah, we need to get her on. Like, Stacey, like, get on.
Shame on us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Well, we'll have to make this part of the MedTech Nerd Tour.
There we go. Sure. All right.
All right.
Very cool.
What's number two, Chris Neumacher?
Well, number two on the list is we have our orthopedic device company special report now out on Mass Device. So, I mean, you really got to go and check this out. You can, you know, easily get a link to it off a story that I posted this week, the 10 largest orthopedic device companies in the world. I've been doing this story annually for years now, and it gets a lot of attention on Mass Device. And this year, we decided to take a step further and produce a full PDF version of this report. And you know, it's free, so you know, go to Mass Device; it's a free download. You know, and check it out. I mean, this is like a ranking of the largest companies, you know, along with all kinds of financial information that I pulled and, you know, recent news about the companies. So you can really get a sense of what the lay of the land is in the orthopedic device space.
It's really fascinating is looking at the where these companies are located. Uh-huh. So number one is J&J. We'll just give that one away. So in Massachusetts, Westchester, Pennsylvania, uh-huh. Warsaw, Indiana, of course.
Yeah.
Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And then going down the list, and I won't get into each company, but Kalamazoo, Michigan, people can guess that one. Warsaw, yeah. Indiana, can guess that one.
Yeah.
Memphis, Tennessee, Louisville, Colorado, people uh-huh. can maybe guess that one. London, Wilmington, Delaware, Audubon, Pennsylvania, Louisville, Texas, Largo, Florida, and Carlsbad, California. So orthopedics has taken root all over the place, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool.
Yep. It's interesting, too, because, I mean, when you talk about the big med tech hubs, I mean, it's Massachusetts, Minnesota, California, but you know, orthopedics is kind of a little different. It's kind of, you know, I mean, just, you know, the centers of gravity that it has in, you know, in Indiana and in New Jersey, it's pretty... Mm-hmm. Cool.
Well, as number one, we'll reflect or speak to the self-proclaimed orthopedic capital of the world. So what is number one?
Number one is that company in Warsaw, Indiana, Zimmer Biomet. And you know, they had their Q1 results, you know, that where they, you know, they actually upped their full year revenue guidance. So they cut earnings projections, you know, amid all the tariff uncertainty. But, you know, the bigger news was, you know, I wrote this the story on Mass Device, and I wrapped in a lot from Ivan Tornes's keynote at Device Talks Boston last week, which was, I mean, you know, especially in these uncertain times, I mean, I just really appreciated like hearing a CEO who's just like so, just, I mean, just the optimism and the, you know, like, you know, to heck with it, you know, damn, you know, like kind of this damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead type mentality, like just literally saying we want to be like the boldest med tech company on earth, and like kind of detailing all the ambitious plans they have for the company. You know, it's refreshing. Like I'd love to hear more CEOs do that.
No, amen. We covered that in the podcast last week. He definitely, for me anyway, stole the show. I think it was the number one or number two thing that everyone was talking about after. And he is fantastic to talk to. Same guy off the stage than he is on the stage. And I loved his comment about when I asked him about his social media posting and how he just, everyone in his company wants him to post less. His HR comms. But he just believes in being out front and center, and I wish more CEOs would do the same. I just think our industry needs to hear from our leaders, and I hope we hear more from the folks who are steering these ships of our med tech fleet. How's that?
I like to see, you know, I mean, I put Mahoney at Boston Scientific in the same category, kind of like big optimistic.
Oh, sure.
Personalities. Mm-hmm. I just would love to see that more of that in our industry, because it's doing so many cool things. So I mean,
Kevin Lobo too.
Yeah, Kevin.
That's the point. We have such great CEOs, and when you talk to them, you leave saying, "Wow, what a dynamic individual!" And I would just want to see that someone out there in public for others to see.
I won't point any fingers, but I would say that, you know, corporate PR has been very slow to adjust to the new media environment that we have seen created over the last decade or so. And I think the companies that are going to benefit are the ones that have CEOs that say, no, like somebody like Yvonne is like, no, I'm going out there. I'm putting myself out there because, you know, this is where our audience is. And I need to be a personality that's out there.
Yeah, and you can do it. I mean, we're a highly regulated industry, and we should be, and that's fine. I think there's workarounds. I am optimistic, though, just thinking about recent CEO appointments. So we mentioned Ashley McAvoy. She's now CEO at Insulet. She's a very public person. Robert White, now CEO of Olympus. And Olympus just launched our Olympus Talks podcast with Olympus.
Yeah.
So they're emerging.
Yeah.
And I think our roster of potentially public CEOs is growing, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So. Let's keep it going,
Let's
people.
Keep it going. I mean, because our industry is doing some like really cool things. So, I mean, we need to have like, you know, these, I mean, why can't we be more like the high tech industry or whatever, where there's just like these personalities running the companies that, you know, like that get people excited about that. And I mean, and that in turn will, you know, get, you know, more young engineers and, you know, people, you know, to get into this versus, you know, cryptocurrency or video game development or all. I mean, it's nice to have nice video games. I mean, but, you know, I think like medical devices that save people's lives are pretty, pretty darn exciting.
Yeah. And space isn't going anywhere. Enough with the aerospace stuff. Like it's going to be there. Let's save some lives here.
We'll get to space eventually. I mean, you know, it's been around for 12 billion years. It can wait a little bit longer, you know, I mean, our sun won't blow up for another billion years. So, I mean, won't blow up. It'll expand and incinerate our planet, but that's a billion years from now. We got time. We can get out.
All right. You're harshing our good mood here, sorry. Chris Newmark. We're on a positive trait now. Everyone's going to fret about the sun, but I'm with Joe Mullings. Yeah. Spoke last week, let's make medtech sexy. Yeah. I don't know if you and I are moving that forward, but we're certainly making it exciting, I think.
I think so. It's fantastic. Yeah. So, and to continue that excitement, I mean, there's going to be some fantastic, you know, speakers at Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th.
We'll have companies, we'll have discussions on robotics, we'll talk about IVL, we'll have J&J there. We'll have Andromeda there. We'll have Motif there. We'll have
Brooke Story from BD, who's, you know, fantastic.
Solventum, Brooke
Story Solventum's there. All right. BD. Good.
Yep. Inspire will be well represented. Kayleen Brown put together a fantastic panel. We'll have a panel from our hosts, the University of Minnesota. So excited about that.
Yeah.
Presentations by Syncardia, by a couple by Medtronic. In Boston Scientific is definitely presenting. So. All the big wigs will be there, and I hope you'll join us too. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register.
You got to be there. All right.
Got to be there. All right, Chris Newmarker. Great job.
Good times. See you next week, man.
Well, Vincent Sordain, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome, Tom.
It's wonderful to have you. And I always enjoy learning about the medtech markets in other parts of the world. So I'm particularly interested in hearing how neuromodulation is being adopted OUS, because I think this may be a shock to you, but a lot of us have a very US-centric view of the world. So it's great to learn how others do it. But first, I'd like to understand your background a bit, Vincent. How did you find your way into the medtech industry?
But first, let me say that it's a real honor to be part of this podcast. As someone based outside of the US, I admit it's a bit intimidating as well. but I'm excited to share a bit our story. So I didn't plan really to go on into medtech. I studied in France, in Germany, in the US, and this industry wasn't really on my radar. My parents weren't involved in anything related to healthcare, not even close. But sometimes, let's say, life surprises you. For me, it was at the age of 24 in a hotel lobby in Paris during a vascular congress. I had a coffee with the leader in this field, someone my father knew as a customer. We chatted for 10 minutes and he offered me a job on the spot.
Wow.
So I said yes, even faster than I ordered the coffee, you know, the espresso. And that one moment changed everything, you know.
What energized you so?
I was just impressed by what he was describing about the job and how much you had an impact. You were transforming life, mm-hmm. you know. And it did drive me all my career because, believe me or not, but I spent 28 years by Boston Scientific.
Wow.
So I know it's rare today, but and 20 of those years in neuromodulation. And neuromodulation is a division you fall in love from day one.
I believe it.
You know, yeah. The moment you witness the life-changing impact of this technology, okay, you know, you want to stay.
Yeah. No, there's a bit of magic, I think, to neuromodulation, yes. Where suddenly someone, you flip a switch and someone has felt pain, now they no longer feel pain, had tremors, now they no longer have tremors. It's really remarkable.
You know, Tom, I always describe to anyone moving in our division what it means. It is, I tell them, it's just the moment. Hmm. The moment you switch on a remote control and you see on the face of the patient that his life is transformed. Just for that, you know, few seconds, you want to stay.
That's remarkable. So that job you were offered, was it sales or product manager or what was the
It was role? Sales, yeah. in our vascular division. And you know, it was also, it's a bit the beginning of Boston Scientific, you know, because it's 29 years ago. So uh-huh. I was in charge of balloon and stent for peripheral vascular disease.
And how did you make your, what led you to the neuromodulation side of the business?
Well, you know, after peripheral vascular disease, I moved to electrophysiology for uh-huh. 7 years, which was a very exciting, actually, business as well. And we were dealing with stimulation. And when Boston Scientific acquired Advanced Bionics, a cochlear implant company, they had very few people in Europe who knew about stimulation. Uh-huh. You know, and so they offered me a job to move to this new division we are creating, pain management, assuming that I knew, and I didn't know anything. But then I was so excited about this technology, and I'm still after more than 20 years in it, so that I did jump in it without thinking much. Mm.
Did they know you didn't know, or did you let them think that you knew more than you really knew?
I think they did not know.
So
they did not know. But in fact, they didn't have many volunteers neither, I guess, because it was looking very complex and you had to build everything from scratch because nothing was existing. Mm-hmm. So you need to have a bit of entrepreneur spirit or, let's say, being a bit fearless to jump in it without knowing much. But, you know, I had a very good feeling, you know, about this technology, about the impact, about how much people were speaking about it with so much passion. So I think there is something in this, you know. I really want to be part of this story.
That's wonderful. So you're vice president of neuromodulation for Europe, Middle East, and Africa.
Yes.
First, introduce me to that business. Where is most of your business? Where is your growing business? Give me a sense of the markets in the different geographies.
You're right. It's a big region because you have over 110 countries, I guess. I stopped counting. But you have 110 countries and more than 2 billion inhabitants. So that's very large. But because we are dealing with devices that are to improve quality of life, of course, you find this technology first in very mature countries. So I will say the old Europe. Here you have Germany, UK, France, Spain. That's already really where neuromodulation has started. But now that we are going after 30 years of neuromodulation about existing, because deep brain stimulation, for example, was started in France. Mm-hmm. So now we are expanding. And we have two arrays, movement disorders, like Parkinson's disease, and we have a technology called Versailles Genus Deep Brain Stimulation System, and chronic pain with our the other platform we have, which is WaveWriter Alpha Spinal Cord System. And we have a third one. We are going, actually, a third category, steam-free pain therapy. We call it radio frequency ablation. And probably you've heard lately about Intracept. Uh-huh. For lower back vertebrogenic pain. So of course, it's about devices, but let's say we focus more on the whole journey, making life easier for doctors and better for patients. You know, so we have introduced a few technology for this. In DBS, one I really like, it's in image-guided software. We call it VN5, to cut the programming time in half, because programming the deep brain stimulation device can be a bit cumbersome. So we are working really on simplifying this. And we are introducing a new lead called Cartesia X on HX with 16 contacts on the lead. So which give, you know, what is key in deep brain, it's precision. So having more leads, being able to steer the current in different direction, will help you to have better outcome, reduce the side effect, and end of the day also be more sustainable. You know, when we started deep brain stimulation, we had 4 contacts on an electrode. Huh. You know, so now we are at 16 contacts, and I'm really glad about it, because here it's really about precision, but also it's about time, the time it takes to get to the target. So that's what we are working on. Similarly, in SES, we have a new lead with 16 contacts. We did the first case in Europe, actually, today in Germany. And we have 16 contacts as well on that lead. So that gives, again, the doctor for spinal cord stimulator more precision, but also more flexibility.
So with more contacts, are you able to use fewer implants because you have the more contacts, or are you applying more energy? Are you narrowing where you're applying the energy, or are you simply able to cover more territory?
Yeah, so if you think about SCS, it's about the coverage of vertebral level. So here you have a better coverage, but you still keep a tight spacing between the contact, which helps you really to focus where you want to put the current, apply the right energy. Not too much, not too little, but also, let's say, you know, pain is dynamic, so it's not static. So sometimes that pain moves, and so that helps you also to address, let's say, the evolution of pain for the patient without having to put another lead. Or sometimes you may have some micro migration of the lead as well, so that will really help you here.
Interesting. So help me understand the markets there for all of this. I mean, again, I've talked primarily about U.S. markets. I know about our pain problems here in the U.S. I know about the issue with opiates and the opportunities for medical devices. What paint a picture for me about the situation over there. Is it similar? Is it comparable? Or do you have different things at play?
You have similarities. Of course, we say that chronic pain affect 1 in 5 adults in Europe. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So it's a relatively large number of people who have chronic pain. You know, we say chronic pain is after six months of continuous pain. So it's a very large group, you know, and it impacts the quality of life, mental health, the ability to work. And as the population ages, the number are only going up. You know, we did a few surveys about it. So we know that young adults are twice as likely to have underdiagnosed pain and to self-medicate. Surprisingly, or maybe not, women often feel less understood by those around them. Another painful truth is one in four patients wait over 3 years just to get a diagnosis.
So and for 3 years, course, they're just dealing with the pain and they're going through life with the pain.
They're dealing with the pain. They're going from one doc to another. So it's also very difficult to find the right pathway to get to the right centers. You know, it's even, you know, what is making it difficult even for me is that Europe is made up of many different healthcare systems. So there is not one market, but many. What they have in common, there is a big unmet need. You know, so clearly for us, there is a need for faster diagnosis, better awareness for patients as well, and of course, more treatment options. And that's pain. But if you think about deep brain stimulation, so for Parkinson's disease, no surprise for you, Europe is aging. And that is changing everything for us. By 2050, one in three Europeans will be over 65.
Wow.
I will be part of those. So, and that puts serious pressure, you know, that put pressure on our healthcare system. And the number of people aged 60 plus in Europe will rise from 215 million in 2021 to over 300 million by 2050.
Wow.
So, and with age come more chronic condition, and Parkinson being the one, the fastest growing. So I think when we look globally, the number of people with Parkinson's disease has doubled since 1990. And it's expected to double again by 2040.
And again, this is all demographics, just people are aging, so the cases go up.
So and you imagine, and if you think about DBS in EMEA, and you have a few millions of people suffering from Parkinson, you have very few people who are treated with deep brain stimulation, unfortunately.
How is the adoption for neuromodulation and neurostimulation in Europe?
In general, it's still very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Why is that? So for deep brain, let's say we are limited by the number of centers. Mm-hmm. Who can perform the procedure because it's also require a very large team, lots of capital equipment. A big organization that very few centers can afford. So that is limiting, in fact, also the number of patients that can be treated with deep brain stimulation. For SCS, it's just very fragmented, you know, and if you really think about France, where I live, true pain centers, it's something relatively new, you know, and they try to organize the different treatments that are given to those patients. But that's why you see so many people under diagnosis and under treated. And sometimes when they find the right physician, it's a bit too late. So the big challenge is probably the referral pathway. Again, it takes, I think I have an example for you in the UK, for example. You had also the impact of COVID. There is still a huge backlog of elective procedure due to COVID. And I think on the waiting list, I was looking at the beginning of the year for UK, it was 7.5 million people waiting to be treated overall, not only neuromodulation. And I think that more than 3 million already waited longer. So they have a target at 18 weeks, so 3 million have been waiting longer. So there is this pressure on the hospital as well. So they need solution. We need to develop technologies that save time and resources without compromising patient outcome for sure. So that's a bit where I think we have a big role in terms of bringing meaningful technology to reduce in DBS the time of programming, to in SES to gain a faster pain relief. We have a few solutions. We have a new solution called FAST, where you implant the device in 2 minutes. You can see the pain relief. So end of the day, we need to make the procedure more efficient, more precise, to improve the patient outcome. And I think that's where I like to speak about meaningful innovation. I think this is where it plays a role.
So is pain seen for a long time here? I think pain was just seen as something you endure and live with, not something you treat. Is pain seen as something you treat? Is that awareness? What's that awareness like in the areas that you're covering?
I say it's moderate to high, I think, in countries like Germany, UK, and relatively low for lots of other countries. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, if you think about University of Medicine as well, when a physician is getting trained as a doctor, what time they spend on pain management is relatively low as well. So there is still a lot to do in terms of education. So for us, of course, where we can help, it's on physician education. But also we have a role to play to streamline the referral pathway. And again, more on the procedure side, bring procedures that will really help.
Do you have limitations on how you engage with patients and educate patients and market to patients?
And here again, it's very different by country, but you have it is right countries where we cannot engage at all with patients. You know, I think in the US you have more freedom.
I think so. Yeah, you certainly know? Patient advocates, patient groups.
For us, it's very limited. We try to support patient association who have a role to play to raise awareness. But our action is relatively limited. What we can do is more educate physician, educate referrals. So that's probably more where our action will take place.
And how are payers viewing the products that you're offering? I mean, again, you have multiple payers. Most are government supported in some form or fashion to some degree.
As you know, different healthcare system, different payers, different indication approved. So it's very fragmented. And today, it's actually also one of the difficulty to explain sometime about EMEA is that every market is different. So we have to customize on a regular basis. There is a need for more real-world evidence. It is right. You know. So that's also where we need to work with the physician community to bring the right evidence, to increase the funding, while also raise awareness on all these technologies.
So what is your, in dealing with the different opportunities in different, in over 100 different markets, do you have a game plan? And I'm speaking very informally, but do you have a game plan that's the same for like the first three or four pages are all the same, like, and then you just customize the fourth page for that specific market? Or when you're dealing with this many different markets, are you throwing the entire game plan out the window for each market and having to rewrite the four pages for every single country?
Fortunately, we don't have to do this.
Oh, good.
I think they have all the same problem in terms of unmet need, number of patients underdiagnosed. So let's say there is not a magic formula, of course, but I think the call points are pretty the same. You know, what might be different, it's in fact what the regulator allow us to do in terms of awareness and in terms of training. So this is where we have to customize.
And how are patients responding to, I mean, obviously if someone's in pain and you're able to minimize the pain, that individual, I'm sure, is thrilled with the concept. But is the idea of neuromodulation, neurostimulation, how widely embraced is that here? I mean, I think people are still just becoming aware of it here in the U.S. on a grand scale. Like, it's still miraculous to some and unknown to many.
I think it's still So especially for pain, if I take spinal cord stimulator or radio frequency, it's poorly known across the board, really poorly known. For deep brain stimulation, I think there is more awareness because you have a very active patient association, and it's a community that get together very quickly. And I think most of the Parkinson patients get well informed about the different form of treatment. You know, here, what is even if today deep brain stimulation is really transformative, I guess having in mind that we're going to put a lead in your brain is still very difficult for lots of patients to accept when you can take maybe a drug that is going to work so-so for a couple of years. And before you jump really to the surgery, it takes a long time. I think I had read, I'm not sure about that number, but I read that it was taking something like 7 years before a patient really jumped to a stimulation device. So, of course, again, lots of education need to be done, but so deep brain stimulation remain confidential despite it is a 30-year-old technology.
Right.
Or therapy. The technology has evolved, but the therapy is installed.
No, that's very true. Yeah, no, I think of it as new, but you're right. I've been covering it my entire career in medtech, so it's been around for a little while.
And you know, to some extent, it's a dilemma for me, working for 20 years in neuromodulation. I've seen so many people where the life has been transformed and see so few people benefiting from it. I still, with my team, I really think, what do we do wrong?
Yeah, no.
You know?
And I was going to ask, I mean, so you're looking forward now. We'll move to where you're headed. I mean, early on, you identified the demographics that represent both a concern for the society, but an opportunity for a company that develops technology that helps people overcome things.
You know, when you look at DBS and for Parkinson, we had a study in the US. We did Vantage study, even in Europe. We see that over 60% improvement in motor function 6 to 12 months after the procedure. So it's a massive, massive change. And also a reduction of the medication by 60%. And we made a study in the US called Intrepid, and we show that the patient had 6 more hours per day without bothersome symptoms. You know, so it's a real boost in terms of quality of life. And again, that's a bit of pity that not more patients are benefiting from it.
And that's where I was going, because so you've got people who need it and you have the technology that can help. How are you looking forward? What are you doing to close that gap? You say you're working with physicians. I'm not sure what work you need to do with payers, but what is your strategy going forward to help get the word out?
For debris, so here you have also one of the issue is capacity in Europe. Uh-huh. Today, again, I've been speaking about very few centers. So since, let's say, the post-COVID is difficult because they have staff shortage. You've seen also, I've been speaking about that, the waiting list of patients is growing. So they are in competition with other therapies. Yeah, so I think where we can really help is to make sure that the procedure can be done faster without compromising the outcome. Uh-huh. And that's really, I like to say that we try to simplify the procedure, not being simplistic, but simplify it and simplify at every phases of the procedure. You know, we started a deep brain stimulation procedure that was taking 6 hours. To now being around 2 hours, 2 hours 30. So we reduce already the time of procedure to also create capacity to be able to treat more patients. So that's also one of the difficulties I see in lots of countries, in especially in Europe right now, where they suffer from capacity.
And how about the Middle East? I mean, we're obviously seeing, There's a lot of attention to healthcare in this space, a lot of space-age healthcare facilities, amazing conferences. I mean, there's an awareness there. How is it being received there?
It is growing. You know, I don't have necessarily specific market data. It's a bit more difficult in Middle East and Africa. But I see that it is growing, of course, from a lower base, but there is more room probably to scale. When I look at the countries who are doing well, they are the one investing in physician education, in the referral pathway, awareness, workshop, and also adopting faster some technology that supports this faster procedure, but also a good patient experience. Because the best ambassador of technology is a patient, especially in DBS. And we need to make sure that patients get a good experience as well of the full process and the procedure. So and that's where we try to help all the physicians we are working on in that region. You know, it's definitely a bit more difficult.
Excellent. Well, it is an amazing technology. I can certainly understand the excitement you feel when you see when the switch is flipped and the benefit is felt. So I'm grateful for the look into the market you're serving, and thanks for joining us on the podcast, Vincent. All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, join us at Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register and use the code DTWeekly25. If you're going to be at the Medical Alley's annual dinner, please say hello. Would love to meet more fine folks from the Twin Cities. Looking forward to that night, and look for us out on the road for the MedTech Nerd Tour, rolling around the Twin Cities, looking forward to seeing so many great sights up close, and of course, trying myself a Juicy Lucy. Sounds delicious. So thanks again for being part of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast, and join us at Device Talks Minnesota on June 11th. And of course, please subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network. Please share this episode, and please connect with me on LinkedIn. Connect with Chris Newmarker on LinkedIn. And of course, our fantastic managing editor, Kayleen Brown, connect with her as well. We would love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. Take care, everybody.